All right, so today we're diving deep into a pretty heavy topic. It gets right to the core of like human psychology and how it connects with power, you know? We're going to be looking at the psychology of erasure, specifically within the context of the Zionist Project and how that's impacted Palestinians. We're going to try to, you know, unpack this whole question of like how can a society support or even justify like extreme violence against another group?
It's a really fascinating question, but it's also deeply disturbing. And it's something that thinkers like Hannah Arendt and Frantz Fanon, they spend a lot of time grappling with this, you know.
Yeah.
And their work is really helpful to look at because it helps us understand how dehumanization, you know, like when you strip away another person's humanity, that's like a prerequisite for oppression.
So we're talking about something that goes way beyond just like disagreement or conflict here, right?
Right.
We're talking about like a systematic effort to erase a whole group of people, deny their existence, deny their history,
Yeah.
you know, like deny their very humanity.
Exactly. And that's where the psychological mechanisms are just so crucial, because it's those mechanisms that allow people to feel okay, you know, to reconcile their own sense of morality
Yeah.
with these actions that would otherwise be unthinkable.
So for this deep dive, our main source is this academic article.
Okay.
It's called The Psychology of Erasure, Dehumanization and the Zionist Project.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't hold back. Right from the start, it jumps into this incredibly powerful story about the destruction of the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza.
Right. The article highlights how when you destroy a hospital, a place that's dedicated to healing,
Right.
you know, a place dedicated to saving lives,
Yeah.
it becomes this really chilling symbol of erasure because you're not just targeting individuals, you're going after the actual infrastructure of care and support.
Just imagine that. A place meant for healing, bombed to rubble.
Yeah.
You know, it's just hard to even wrap your head around like the level of dehumanization that would allow someone to justify something like that.
And the article goes on, you know, describes like the horrific aftermath of the Israeli airstrikes on the Jabalia refugee camp,
Right.
where this whole extended family was wiped out in just a single attack.
Yeah, that detail about like 130 members of one family being killed in a single attack really stuck with me. It's just such a stark reminder of the human cost of this conflict, you know?
Yeah.
It's like these individual lives that are shattered amidst all this, you know, political rhetoric.
Yeah, it's a devastating illustration of what aren't called the banality of evil, like how these really horrific acts can become normal
Yeah.
within a system that dehumanizes the other.
So how do we even begin to understand this? Like, how can people who probably see themselves as moral and just how can they participate in or support this violence?
Well, that's where the article starts digging into the historical roots of Zionist ideology.
Okay.
And it traces some parallels to other settler colonial projects like Manifest Destiny in the US, for example.
So this idea that one particular group has like a divine right to a specific land,
Right.
regardless of who might already be living there.
Exactly. And the article quotes Theodor Herzl's diary. It's pretty chilling when you read it. He talks about spiriting the penniless population across the border,
Wow.
which is, of course, a nice way of saying forced displacement of a whole population.
It's shocking to see how openly they talked about, you know, removing the people who already live there
Right.
in order to establish a Jewish state.
Yeah. This historical context is crucial because it helps us understand the kind of psychological framework that the Zionist Project operates in. You see, the displacement of Palestinians wasn't seen as like a tragic necessity. It was a key part of the project itself.
So you're saying this erasure, this dehumanization was it like baked into the ideology from the very beginning? It wasn't like an unintended consequence. It was a deliberate strategy.
That's exactly what the article argues. And then it goes on to explore how they actually implement and maintain the strategy through different mechanisms like creating an enemy and, you know, systematically using dehumanizing language.
Okay, let's break that down. How does creating an enemy contribute to this process of erasure?
Well, Fanon argued that the colonizer often needs to create a narrative that justifies their dominance. And that means they have to portray the colonized people as a threat, as inherently dangerous or inferior,
Okay.
to legitimize their subjugation.
So in this case, they cast Palestinians as the perpetual enemy, right? The existential threat to the very existence of Israel.
Exactly. And then they reinforce this narrative by using dehumanizing language.
And the article brings up some really disturbing examples of that, right?
Yeah.
Like Israeli leaders using terms like beasts walking on two legs
Right.
or drug cockroaches to describe Palestinians.
Yeah, those are just a couple of examples. This kind of language, it's meant to strip away the humanity of the other, make it easier to justify violence against them. And it's a tactic that's been used throughout history to justify oppression and genocide.
Yeah, it's like reducing an entire group of people to just one single negative characteristic, a threat to be eliminated instead of human beings deserving of respect and dignity.
Exactly. And this dehumanization, it goes way beyond language. It shows up in the media, in educational materials, even in everyday interactions.
Wow.
It becomes this systematic effort to erase the Palestinian narrative, their history, their culture, like their very existence as a people. Hashtag TTS the deep dive episode 2025-0115, part 2 of 3. It's like they're trying to create this parallel universe where the Palestinian experience is either completely gone or it's so distorted you wouldn't even recognize it.
That's a scary thought. And the article argues that this erasure, it's not just about physical displacement, right? It's also about psychological and cultural erasure.
Right. The Zionist project, it's not just about controlling the land. It's about controlling the whole narrative, like the way that people understand and remember history.
So it's about controlling what information people can access and using that to shape how they see reality.
Exactly. And one of the most effective ways to do that is through the education system.
Okay, so how does that actually play out in practice? What kind of messages are they giving young Israelis?
Well, the article highlights how Israeli textbooks often present a very specific and very biased view of history. So Palestinian history and culture are often minimized or just completely erased. And the focus is really heavily on Jewish suffering and this idea of Israel as like a land that was divinely promised to the Jewish people.
So it's like creating this sense of historical entitlement that makes it easier to justify pushing Palestinians out.
Exactly. And then the curriculum itself often emphasizes security threats. It portrays Palestinians as inherently dangerous,
right?
Which again reinforces that us versus them mentality.
That reminds me of what we talked about earlier about creating an enemy, right? It's like this narrative of fear and threat is woven into the very fabric of Israeli society.
Yeah, and it's not just in the textbooks. Even school trips often reinforce the same narrative. They'll take students to sites that emphasize Jewish history and heritage. But Palestinian sites are either ignored completely or they're presented in a negative light.
So it's like this constant bombardment of a single narrative, a single perspective.
Right. And this indoctrination, it goes beyond the classroom, too. The article also talks about how mandatory military service shapes the Israeli psyche.
Right. Because for most young Israelis, serving in the IDF is like a rite of passage.
Mm-hmm.
But the article argues that this experience actually contributes to the normalization of violence against Palestinians.
Mm.
How does that work?
Well, during their service, soldiers are often put in situations where they have to enforce policies that violate Palestinian rights.
Mm.
So, you know, they're manning checkpoints, conducting raids, participating in military operations. It all just becomes part of their daily routine.
So the use of force against Palestinians just becomes normal, just another part of the job.
Exactly. And the training they get often reinforces the dehumanization of Palestinians. They're portrayed as the enemy that has to be subdued.
So it's like they create this system where young people are conditioned to see Palestinians as less than human, as threats to be controlled rather than individuals who deserve respect and dignity.
Right. And this psychological conditioning has a huge impact on both sides of the conflict. The article talks about the trauma experienced by both Israelis and Palestinians, especially the children.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the psychological toll that this must take.
Yeah.
The constant fear, the violence, the sense of hopelessness.
Absolutely. And then this trauma is made even worse by the lack of empathy and understanding between the two groups.
Because having empathy would mean acknowledging the humanity of the other side. And that challenges the whole foundation of the Zionist project.
Exactly. Empathy is seen as a weakness, a threat to national security. It's something that's actively suppressed in Israeli society.
Wow. So it's not just about physical control and displacement. It's about controlling the narrative, controlling emotions, controlling how people think and feel.
Right. And they maintain this control through a whole web of mechanisms, things like media manipulation, propaganda, and silencing anyone who disagrees.
So let's talk about the media. The article argues that the mainstream media, especially in the West, often presents a very biased view of the conflict.
Yeah, a lot of the reporting lacks historical context. They don't adequately explain the root causes of the conflict or the fact that the occupation is still going on. They tend to focus on Israeli perspectives and narratives. Palestinian voices are often marginalized or silenced altogether.
I definitely noticed that. It's like there's this constant portrayal of Israel as the victim, even when they're the ones inflicting the violence.
And even the language they use reinforces that framing. They use terms like terrorists almost exclusively for Palestinians, while Israeli soldiers are called security forces or defense forces.
So it's like creating this moral hierarchy where the Israeli side is automatically favored.
Exactly. And this bias isn't accidental. The article talks about the role of pro-Israel lobbying groups in shaping media coverage. These groups put a lot of pressure on media outlets, either directly or by funding think tanks and research institutions that produce pro-Israel narratives.
So it's like they've created this echo chamber where the same messages are constantly being repeated. And that makes it almost impossible for alternative perspectives to get through.
And then anyone who tries to challenge these narratives is often accused of anti-Semitism.
Which is a really powerful accusation. The article talks about how this is used to shut down legitimate debate and create a climate of fear.
Yeah, it's a way of silencing people. It's about protecting Israel from any kind of accountability.
So it's not just about controlling the physical space, it's about controlling the intellectual and emotional space as well. It's about creating an environment where certain thoughts and feelings are considered unacceptable, even dangerous.
And this creates a society where critical thinking is suppressed, where empathy is seen as a weakness, and the cycle of violence and dehumanization just continues.
So what's the way out of this? How do we break this cycle? Is there even any hope for a just and lasting peace?
Well, the article does offer some potential solutions, but they require a pretty radical shift in thinking and dismantling the systems that are causing the problem.
Okay, so what needs to change for this cycle to be broken?
It starts with education. The article stresses the need to completely overhaul the Israeli education system.
So teaching a more balanced and accurate history that acknowledges what Palestinians have gone through.
Exactly. It's about encouraging empathy and critical thinking instead of blind loyalty and obedience.
And what about the role of the media? How can we challenge the dominant narratives and make sure Palestinian voices are heard?
I think it starts by supporting independent media outlets that are committed to providing balanced and accurate coverage.
So supporting organizations like Plus 970 Magazine, Mondo Vice, Electronic Intifada outlets that are willing to challenge the mainstream narrative.
Exactly. And it also means being more critical of the media we consume. Questioning the sources, seeking out different perspectives, and amplifying Palestinian voices.
So being aware of the biases in the media and looking for alternative sources of information.
And we can also support Palestinian artists, writers, filmmakers, anyone who's trying to share their stories and perspectives with the world.
It's about making space for those stories to be heard so the Palestinian experience isn't erased or silenced.
Exactly. And it's also about understanding that this isn't just a Palestinian issue. This is a human issue. This is a fight for justice, for equality, for the very soul of humanity. Hashtag TTS, the deep dive episode 2025-0115, part 3 of 3.
It's easy to feel overwhelmed by all this,
Yeah.
by the sheer scale of this conflict and how deeply ingrained these systems of oppression are.
Huh.
But the article doesn't leave us just feeling hopeless. It actually emphasizes how important global solidarity is and how each of us can play a role in challenging these systems.
Yeah, that's a key point. The article argues that just staying silent or passively watching is a form of complicity because you're basically allowing the perpetrators to just keep doing what they're doing without any consequences.
So it's not enough to just know about the issue. We have a moral obligation to do something about it, right? To speak out against the injustice, to demand accountability.
And there are a lot of different ways to do that. You can support organizations that are working for Palestinian rights, both on the ground and internationally. You can educate yourself and other people about what's really happening, challenge those dominant narratives that we see in the media and even in our own communities.
So it's about using our voices, our resources, our influence to support the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice.
Exactly. We can talk to our friends and family and colleagues about this, share what we've learned, push back against any bias or misinformation that we come across. We can write to our elected officials, urge them to hold Israel accountable for what they're doing, and to support a just and lasting peace.
It sounds like it's about each of us taking responsibility for our role in all of this, whether we're perpetuating the problem or working to change it.
Right. And it's also about recognizing that this isn't just a Palestinian issue. This is a global issue. The occupation of Palestine is a violation of international law, and it has implications for justice and human rights everywhere.
So we need to connect the dots between this specific conflict and the wider fight for a more just and equitable world.
Exactly. The fight for Palestinian liberation, it's all connected to struggles against colonialism, racism, and oppression all over the world.
The article also talks about needing to completely rethink the political landscape to move past this failed two-state solution and towards a future that's actually just and equitable.
Yeah. The article argues that the two-state solution, as it's currently understood, just isn't going to work.
Okay.
Because it just reinforces the existing power dynamics and further disenfranchises the Palestinians.
So what's the alternative then?
Well, the article proposes a one-state solution. So one single democratic state in historic Palestine.
Okay.
Where everyone has equal rights and protections no matter their ethnicity or religion.
That's a pretty radical idea.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there would be a lot of pushback against that, both within Israel and from the international community.
Oh, absolutely. But the article argues that it's the only way to achieve a truly just and lasting peace, one that recognizes the humanity and rights of everyone living in that land.
It sounds like we're talking about a complete paradigm shift here,
like
rejecting the whole framework that's defined this conflict for decades.
Exactly. It means being willing to face some uncomfortable truths, to challenge some deeply held beliefs, and to imagine a future that's completely different from what we see now.
It's a daunting task, but it feels essential.
It is. And it takes more than just political solutions. It requires a fundamental shift in consciousness, recognizing our shared humanity and how interconnected we all are.
So this deep dive, it hasn't just been about understanding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's been about understanding ourselves, you know, our own biases and our own capacity for complicity or for change.
Exactly. The article challenges us to look inward, to confront our own prejudices and assumptions, and to ask ourselves, what role am I playing in all this? Am I contributing to the problem or am I part of the solution?
It's a call to action,
yeah.
A reminder that we can't just sit back and watch this happen. We all have a responsibility to speak up against injustice, to amplify marginalized voices, and to work towards a more just and equitable world.
And the article ends on this really powerful image. It speaks to the resilience of the human spirit. Even in the face of unimaginable suffering, it describes a Palestinian woman planting an olive tree in the rubble of her destroyed home.
Wow. It's a symbol of hope, of defiance, of this unwavering belief in a better future.
Right. And it's a reminder that even in the darkest of times, the human spirit endures. It's a reminder that change is possible. But we have to believe in that possibility. We have to nurture it. We have to fight for it.
So for those listening who might be feeling overwhelmed or unsure of how to actually make a difference, where do we even begin?
Start by educating yourself. Read the article we discussed today. Explore the works of Hannah Arendt and Frantz Fanon. Really dig into the history of this conflict and the lived experiences of Palestinians. Connect with organizations working for Palestinian rights, support their work, and amplify their voices. Challenge the narratives you see in the media and in your own communities. And most importantly, never lose hope. Believe that a better future is possible and work towards it with everything you've got.
That's a powerful message to end on. A message of hope, of responsibility, and of the belief that our actions can create a more just and equitable world.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. It's been challenging, but incredibly important.